The Senate has gone home. I think it still needs to sign off on the spending bill, doesn't it? At least the House agreed to fund the CCC, but I'm still curious what triggered Speaker Pelosi's willingness to sign off on that. And hey, look at this. Could some old ideas breathe new life into biofuels?
Live from the early laps of Harvest 2020 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney all join us today. And right after the news, Jennifer Shike from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, man, I like the way that you described that, the early laps, because
green flag is out. Green flag,
that's right. Boogity, boogity, boogity.
Let's go harvesting, boys.
Love it. How you doing, man? Here we are. It's Friday.
Really, really great. I'm going to tell you something, a little sneak peek here. Pro Farmer members, get over to ProFarmer.com right now. I interviewed Doug Hensley this morning. Last time we talked,
Hertz.
He was from Hertz Real Estate Services about the land markets. We talked in April. He was like, oh, I don't know, man. This is crazy stuff. We don't know what's going to happen. I talked to him today to see, you know, his thoughts now.
Yeah.
I'm fired up.
Oh, cool.
I'm fired up. Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in this afternoon show some?
We're going to hit it in the fourth segment of today's afternoon show. I'll provide some audio and some specifics on some very exciting land sales that he's seen, not just in one area, but over a wide area of farm country.
Wow. That's
great
awesome.
Stuff. Yeah, so I'm doing super great today. I've already done a whole bunch of stuff already.
Good deal.
I don't know what time it is, but man, it's got to be about quitting
time.
I tell you this.
You know, every morning, one of the first things I do is he's probably listening, but don't tell him directly. I at least scan Jim Wiesmeyer's policy update every morning. Well, this morning. It took me quite a bit of time to get through the update because there is so much in there about what is going on right now. And yesterday morning, he had a short item in Pro Farmer's First Thing Today that said, if you don't think that the next farm bill debate has already started, you're not paying attention. I want to know exactly what he means by that. So we're going to get into it today. Yeah.
Great.
All right, man, what you got in the news?
Well, in a recent blog post, USDA chief economist Rob Johansson noted some of the difficulties that agriculture has faced over the past few years, compounded by the coronavirus pandemic. Johansson wrote, quote, between 2014 and 2019, producer prices of corn, for example, fell 44% and prices of soybeans fell 35%, almost $5 a bushel. However, cost of production for these commodities in 2019 was higher or only marginally lower than 5 years earlier. Johansson looked back to February when expectations for the economy were high and noted that since then, financial distress in farm country related to declines in restaurant demand for food products and overall unemployment, among other factors, have stifled growth, saying recovery prospects are highly uncertain, especially for agriculture. He was looking out into 21 and, you know, the recovery. OK, it's going to happen, but maybe not as quickly as we'd hoped.
You know, you go back to that time frame that he was referencing. Mm-hmm. Everybody was anticipating the dairy industry to have a big-time recovery. Corn was going to be better. Soybeans, demand coming back. You can go right down the line. Mm-hmm. 2020 was supposed to be a recovery year, and then COVID busted it in the butt.
Yep.
Yeah, so the recovery is going to take a while. Thanks, Rob.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told her committee leaders to restart negotiations over another round of coronavirus stimulus spending. She drafted a new $2.4 trillion package that would clip around $1 trillion from the May bill, while also making room for new provisions such as restaurant and airline aid. With talks between the White House, Senate Republicans, and Democrats absent for weeks, Pelosi is betting a smaller package than the original $3.5 trillion measure passed in May will bring Republicans back to the negotiating table. Okay, so we trim off $1 trillion. I wonder
Isn't
if it helps.
That amazing.
I wonder if it helps.
Desperately, that $1 trillion was needed when the package was at 3.5. But you know, hopefully this will get us back to the table. There's got to be a willingness on both sides to negotiate, and I don't know if that willingness is there on either side. I don't know.
A bevy of agriculture proponents are urging President Trump to remain a part of the World Trade Organization and to work with other members to revamp and modernize the organization's rules. WTO supporters are concerned that President Trump might withdraw the U.S. from the institution. Many in U.S. ag say that could be detrimental to farm and food sectors that rely on export markets. This after several member nations cried foul in regards to U.S. government financial support for farmers. And it's not just this year. That goes back a couple of years when they're saying, hey, look, this is not fair.
Right. I think Lighthizer is probably still on, would support staying in the WTO. We'll check with Jim on that. But yeah, I think he probably would support that. So I don't see us leaving the WTO. Not anytime soon.
No. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler scoffed at California Governor Newsom's pledge to ban the sale of all new gasoline-fueled cars after 2035, calling it, quote, more aspirational than realistic. The EPA has reviewed data showing that the public is not interested in buying electric vehicles in enough numbers to make the California plan possible. And finally, 66% of 154 oil and gas companies polled by the Dallas Fed said they believe U.S. oil production has peaked, according to a survey released Wednesday. In comments attached to the survey, oil executives from companies active in Texas, New Mexico, and Louisiana expressed alarm about the state of the industry. Chip.
Yeah, interesting. Two-thirds of the 154 that were polled.
Yeah, say and these are big timers.
It's the biggest of the big are saying that oil production has peaked. All right, thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Shike. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork, another area where production may have peaked, at least for a while here. Jennifer is in hogs, according to those farrowing intentions in the Hogs and Pigs report, right?
Yes. I mean, it's looking like that's going to be going down, but I mean, I think we expected that.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Very much. What else did you see in that H&P report, Jennifer, that caught your attention?
Well, you know, I guess the thing that I found interesting and that the economists that were on the National Pork Board's call yesterday, it's just, you know, trying to understand how those roughly 1.5 million hogs keep getting moved forward in that 180 pound and up category. And so they spent a lot of time talking about that and just, you know, saying that they're having a little bit of trouble believing that they're all going to be coming through in the fourth quarter. So that was a question that they had yesterday. And I mean, I think that's always the question. It's hard to, you know, really believe those numbers. But, you know, as somebody told me earlier this week, that's really the best estimate that we probably have out there right now, because nobody really knows.
Right, right. And it, I don't even, the problem is with this, Jennifer, nobody's going to blow a horn or a trumpet or anything like that when that last backed up hog finally makes its way through the processing. So we're going to be left wondering.
That'd be helpful.
It would be, wouldn't it? Ring a bell, ding, ding, ding. Yeah. That's it. Problem solved.
Move forward.
The good news is the lean hog futures market today is trading $1 to $2 higher. So not a negative reaction to that that Hogs and Pigs report. All right, Jennifer, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. That's Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We're going to get this free-for-all going next on AgriTalk.
Join AgriTalk next week for Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health, with additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition. Register free at dairyherd.com/dairyweek.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. It is Friday. That means it's time for the free-for-all. Let's bring them in. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, Sean?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Glad that you are here. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Jim, welcome.
I'm here and at it.
You're going to do the streaming of Signal to Noise again today, huh?
Yeah, we had fun last week, including your entry in it. So we're going to do it again.
Excellent. Yeah. So if you want to watch the live stream of Jim Wiesmeyer's and John Harris' DC Signal to Noise, 1 o'clock Central Time at the AgriTalk Facebook page. 1 o'clock Central Time, AgriTalk Facebook page, live stream of DC Signal to Noise. And Pam Johnson, I don't know if you watched it last week or not, but I don't know if the video really adds that much to the conversation, but it was sure fun to watch them. How you doing, Pam?
That way. I'm great, yeah. Thanks.
Good, good, good. What's the status up there?
We are starting to roll. We've got about 3 days of bean combining under our belt, and you know how it goes. You get all the bugs out and stuff breaks down right away, so then you can really run. The weather's been great. We actually were hoping for just a little shower to even out the bean moisture, but doesn't look like we're going to get it. Got a good stiff wind today and some sun, and be back at it.
Yeah, you even had a chance for a light shower last night up there in the northern areas. But looks like the next chance for rain is what? Early Sunday morning?
Well, I heard somebody say 2 weeks, but I don't know.
Jeez, I tell you. How are the beans doing?
Well, you know, you don't know until you get out there. And we've talked before about the drought taking the top off. Mm-hmm. And just... at our first start, our field average was 62, so very pleasantly surprised.
Good. Good. Good for you. Good for you. All right. You know, let's I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and just throw a dart at the board because there's so many items, so many issues that we could talk about. But let's start with the CCC funding and the continuing resolution to fund the government. Jim, the Senate's still got to pass that, right?
They'll pass it. It looks like Wednesday. They'll go to the 11th hour, as usual, but it's coming.
Yeah. Anything that really caught your eye as far as was included versus was excluded, anything like that?
Well, some signals, mostly noise, but it showed grassroots politics at its best because Pelosi had to bow wow, not only from pressure from Republicans, but her own party in farm states, that they desperately need that $21 billion cash infusion for the Commodity Credit Corporation. So grassroots still works, Jeff.
Yeah, Pam, earlier this week I was talking about the fact that all six of the lawmakers from the state of Iowa, which is evenly split between Democrats and Republicans, how they all signed a letter urging that the CCC be funded. I thought that was, I liked that. I liked seeing that.
Yeah, don't we wish more of that could happen,
right? Yep, no doubt. The CCC funding, Pam, you spent so much time, or you spend so much time on policy and everything. Labeling it a slush fund was a little off-putting to me. What about you?
Well, we talked about this last week, you know, and I think the optics of the timing, even though we knew the money was appropriated, look like it's buying votes. And I think that's why some people would call it a slush fund. Definitely people, you know, all six of our legislators agreed that we still need it out in farm and ranch country. And as we talked last week, there are other sectors that need it too, and hopefully they'll be able to get something so they can stay solvent, like the airline industry.
Well, I think of, in terms of how it's viewed or defined going forward, or you want to call it a slush fund, or there's other, you know, so a lot of things thrown around. It's how they use it going forward, right? So we're hopefully on the backside of a trade war, getting through COVID-19. And so I think it becomes a question in terms of what word we call it, or, you know, whatever nickname we give it. It's more about how we use it on the go forward basis.
Well, why you saw the opening of the farm bill debate, Chip, is this topic, because some of the Democrats wanted to put some more restrictions on the management of the CCC funding. Pat Roberts fought that, said it was like reopening the farm bill, which it would have been. But this is step one in the new farm bill.
Gotcha. And Sean, I appreciate your comments about how that CCC funds are used going forward is going to determine the view and the opinions of the CCC funding. But we've got some cases coming up in the WTO about how CCC funds have been used in the past, right?
Absolutely, right? And so, you know, from outside the U.S. border, a lot of countries, including Canada, view is it nothing more than just a subsidy to farmers, whether it, you want to call it relief or however you want to call it. It's putting money in the hands of farmers, and it's decreasing some of the competitive factors and mechanisms that are out there. We'll see. Obviously, the White House has not been a fan of the WTO, and the WTO tends to take its time. I found it interesting this week that U.S. farm groups overwhelmingly told the White House the WTO is important to agriculture here in America.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim, what did you make of that support? Yeah, okay. Pam says she's glad they did. What did you make of that, Pam? Jim?
Well, I think you were right on Lighthizer probably wants to remain in the WTO, but he wants a lot more muscle in the dispute resolution body. And that's the, you know, fly in the ointment here, Chip. Right. And he's no longer with us, but Clayton Yeider, former USTR official, former ag secretary, et cetera, said one of the major things was reform of that dispute resolution body. And that's what really needs to be done.
Yeah. Well, but you also need appellate judges, and the U.S. hasn't necessarily been very kind there in making sure that there's appellate judges even in place for the WTO to really function. There's a working group, I forget the name of it, a number of countries getting together trying to put together a committee to handle some of these appeal cases outside of the WTO, of which the U.S. is not participating with, or in some of the reform meetings that have happened. So It's one thing to complain about the WTO and its lack of effectiveness, but it's another to not really want to be a part of trying to piece together version 2.0.
Well, they want to be part of it, but he got their attention.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim, well, what is the holdup in the appointment of the appellate judges?
Well, because they want, Trump administration, i.e. Lighthizer, wants a little more assurances that European Union won't bow wow to Brazil and India like right. they usually do in the WTO. So until they get some credence that this is going to be not just a minor reform that usually happens, they want substantial reform.
Yeah, yeah. Just a heads up, next week for Dairy Week, we're going to have U.S. Dairy Export Council President and CEO and former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack on the show, and we'll bring this up and get some of his takes on that, because the European Union is a trouble spot when it comes to dairy issues, and I'm sure that he'll want to address that. Pam, Jim, what we're talking about reminds me of the green box, blue box, amber box payments that were out there, and I thought the CCC payments, because they're not supposed to be market distorting, fit into that amber box, which kind of kept them outside of the WTO challenges, right, Jim?
Yeah, well, Dr. Joe Glauber, who's a friend of mine, a former top USDA economist, and he's an expert when it comes to what qualifies for amber box, green box, etc. And he's saying we're double our $19.1 billion lid on amber box payments. So I'm not going to take that lightly. That, you know, that is an issue that's going to have to be dealt with.
Yeah. Pam, I thought we were done talking about blue box, green box, amber box.
Probably never, right? Because we took the case on subsidies, criticizing the Chinese to the WTO as the U.S., and we won that case. So, yes, we're exceeding our amber box. We're in extremely strange circumstances with all the black swans we've had. And so I think the important thing is, like Sean said, is what's going to happen moving forward, and what's the future going to be, and how are we going to get back to some kind of market recovery so we don't need those subsidies?
Gotcha. That sounds like a path forward, at least, on this. Okay, and speaking of a path forward, we talked about it a little bit with Gavin Newsom out in California. Deciding that there will be no gasoline-powered vehicles sold in the state after 2035. Does that clear the way for EVs or a more efficient liquid fuel? We'll discuss next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, after being down first 4 days of the week, we got a little strength into the grains.
Yeah, you know, we talked about a little bit here on this segment yesterday, but November beans, they closed right at $10 yesterday. They couldn't find any real active seller interest underneath that mark. They tried below it again overnight and didn't find active sellers, and now we pushed above it. So on a closing basis, that level is still holding, and I think that's key technically. The same can be said for 363 or 363 in December corn. We're finding some support at that level after testing it yesterday. So, you know, technically the market's holding up after the price pullback that we had earlier in the week.
Yeah, FAS jumped the gun with the email on the export sales announcements this morning, but there were some sales for both corn and soybeans. Is that right?
Yeah, FAS did jump the gun a little bit, but they are actual sales, so yep. That's the important thing there. That, you know, the timing was just off, and
exactly.
So, you know, the important thing is that the sales were made.
Right. Okay, lean hogs higher after Hogs and Pigs report. That's good news.
Well, yeah, we gapped lower actually because the report was negative to the front side of the market, but you know, the price data here is telling us now that mid-morning that traders just don't believe the slaughter numbers in those heavyweight categories. And really, the slaughter data since September 1 doesn't back that up. The cash market during that time span doesn't back that up. So basically, the market's saying that, hey, we don't believe what USDA told us yesterday in the H&P report from the market hogs.
All right. Well, I'm willing to go with the market on this instead the report. Thanks, Peach. Have a good weekend. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. Pam Johnson from Iowa, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, and Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer. Jim, a couple of things on the biofuel front. First, the passage of the RFS Integrity Act. What that says is if there's going to be any SREs or small refinery exemptions in the future, EPA is going to have to open up the curtain and let us see why those SREs were issued.
Yeah, well, you would hope that they would listen to transparency, because whatever they do, it should be known rather than Johnny come lately. So let the market know in advance, Chip.
Yeah, Pam, it feels like a step in the right direction. I don't appreciate the fact that we've got to have legislation for this, but nonetheless.
I so agree. I mean, this is what Wheeler promised when he took over the agency,
yeah,
that there'd be more transparency. And how long ago was that, Chip?
I'm not even sure. It's at least 16.
You know,
yeah. Did you hear Wiesmeyer in the background there yelling out, too long?
Long enough that it shouldn't take legislation to make them do what they're supposed to do.
I agree.
Yes. That's the point.
Yes. No, I fully agree with that. Fully agree. It will be interesting to see if there are any SREs issued going forward. If we do get to see that transparency in the decision making there, the next one, the Next Generation Fuels Act. You guys, I love this. I think this is really, really good stuff. The Next Generation Fuels Act. Basically, what it would do is would establish a new 98 research octane number. I'm not exactly sure why they called it a RON, but it basically it would be a minimum for those mid-range ethanol blends, 25-30%. But it's a 98 octane, and what it would do is it would encourage the automakers to do what hopefully it would encourage them to do what I've been wanting them to do forever, and that is to bring that next generation of engines on that is higher compression, that require the higher octane levels. They burn cooler. They further reduce the tailpipe emissions. This is if we can push this, Pam, I really like this.
Well, this is a priority of National Corn Grower Association, and we've been working on this. And, you know, it's like we need a comprehensive energy bill because you can't keep changing horses in the middle of the stream. Autos have to know what they're going to be producing, what the rules are going to come down from Congress. And so, to me, this is like a breath of fresh air that we're finally going to move on this and get the optimized engines. I ran an E85 engine for years, but knew it, we really weren't getting ethanol to the place where it really was doing what it could do.
Right.
Chip, I want to add perspective on this. More than a few years ago, I was in Colin Peterson's office, you know, House Ag Committee Chairman, Democrat from Minnesota. He basically spelled this out for me, saying this is the way the industry ought to go. So I don't know about a fresh idea, but also this is part of the ethanol and biofuel industry's problems, that they eventually come around to the right solutions, but they take God forever time to get there. And this was really the start of growth energy, because you have biofuel people that upset at the RFA for not focusing on logistics, pumps, you know what I mean? And so this goes back. So at least we're finally addressing this.
Yep. You know, that's why I said at the open of the show that it could be some old ideas are breathing new life into the biofuels. This whole idea has been at the center of my ethanol argument since day one. I mean, Haney, what's going to be the attitude in Canada if all of a sudden the U.S. does go to a 98 octane?
Well, I think we kind of, my opinion is we kind of look at the support for biofuels with a little bit of jealousy. I think, you know, Canada's talking, we talked about this last week with the Clean Fuel Standard. Canada's working on its own biofuel policy. I think when it comes to this new act, I think it's full court press, you know, even to the strongest and most radical of environmental climate alarmists, they can get their heads wrapped around how biofuels can be a solution in helping lower greenhouse gas emissions. It is a very, very positive, powerful story that can be told, and no matter where you sit on climate change, this can be a real winner for rural areas, farm communities that are big into biofuels. So I think full court press.
Now listen, if you are curious and want to better understand how the higher octane fuels can increase the efficiency and are a better way of reaching the reduction in the emissions that everybody wants, and it's a better way of doing it than the CAFE standards, Google Dr. Andy Randolph. Dr. Andy Randolph. He's been on AgriTalk before. He was part of a Farm Journal Farm Country update that I moderated. He does a fantastic job of explaining how this all works. Google Dr. Andy Randolph and take a listen to his explanation of it. I think it's fantastic. It might be smarter than banning the sale of liquid fuel vehicles in the year 2035 in California, like Gavin Newsom is proposing there, Jim.
Yes, but we were taught in college all the time, follow the money, and the investment money, not just US, but around the world, is going after the electronic vehicles, Chip. And if Biden were to become president, the signal he's clearly giving is he's going to handle the logistics for EVs right away, unlike the biofuel industry did not do at the right time. He wants a nationwide program for battery charging. And I think it's spot on, to do that.
Okay. Now, do you think California will be able to handle that in 2035, all the electricity demand?
Well, we have time to fix that and to find it out.
But I think the signal is there. Fix the thing.
Yeah, the signal is there. Technology. I'm never going to root against technology, Chip. Never.
No. I'm always a big fan of technology advancement as well. There's no question about it. I don't know if this is a step forward or a step back, though. I mean, what are we going to do with all the old batteries?
I don't think there's been a really good alternative until we can really put our minds and our backs behind this new program for low carbon, high octane. It makes, as you guys have summed up, I couldn't say it better, it makes it a wonderful alternative and an alternative for the electric vehicles, because we need a better liquid fuel market. And to me, there will always be people that want to drive electric cars. I'm not one of them, and I don't think a lot of people are. But this is the answer to everything. It checks all the boxes with the environment, non-carcinogenic aromatics coming out of the tailpipes, rural economic development, and Biden may be for the electric vehicles, but he's also for maintaining a strong RFS and working on issues like this and working with Sherry Bustos.
And this is a long transition period. This isn't like red light, green light, like, hey, tomorrow every single vehicle on the road is electric. The important thing for the biofuel industry is to be a part of the transition solution. And we don't know what this is going to look like in 2050, but we got to lay the groundwork and come up with new solutions to be a part of this kind of mass movement in this direction, to be focused on lowering greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah. I'm all in. You bet. Let's go ahead. I'm in agreement on that. I am in disagreement in saying that 15 years from now is a long period of time. Not on something like this.
You listen to the CEOs of all the major car manufacturers in the U.S. and in Europe and in Asia, and they'll tell you that this is their number one focus, is moving to fully electric. So they seem to be on board, and they see a market and the opportunity to make money.
At Farmer Bob, NWMO tweeted at us yesterday. He says California won't gain anything because everyone will have to buy generators to produce the electricity to power their cars. Their grid stinks. It's more than a 15-year issue.
And where is the electricity going to come from?
Yeah, is it going to come from natural gas or hydrocarbon or air or what?
Or windmills in the Midwest sent out there.
Right.
There are issues.
Oh, you bet. And 15 years feels like a very, very short period of time to try to get to that point, which brings me back to the high-octane fuels. If you want to talk about practicality in a plan, there's the practicality in a plan. Let's get those high-octane fuels out there. Let's get the next generation of the motors in the vehicles. Let's go that step first. There's your practicality in fighting those greenhouse gas emissions. That's how we get it done, you guys.
And maybe getting renewables and big oil to be on the same page once to defend the liquid fuel market.
Pam, you're asking way too much now. I don't know.
I'm an idealist.
I don't know.
It's big oil survival. They better get along. We better get along. And Chip, always been told E25 and E30 just gets you to that thrust more efficiently. That's basically what it is. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's good stuff. Okay, we'll be back. Wrap up the free-for-all on AgriTalk.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
All right. I feel like we're going 100 mile an hour at the end of this show today. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Iowa farmer Pam Johnson, Real Agriculture Sean Haney, Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer. Sean, you had the Packer transparency issues on your list of items that you want to talk about. Senator Fisher out of Nebraska presented some new legislation to address some of that. Did you get a chance to look at it?
Yeah, I did. I find it very interesting. It feels like this is kind of, I would say gaining some steam. Of course, we had Grassley and Tester working together on a bipartisan basis as well. It's, you know, we were talking about transparency earlier with in regards to the SREs. When we use the word transparency, I think it's something that most people can get their head around. The question will be how hard NAMI fights this, representing the Packers, and can they come up with a justifiable reason why there needs to be less transparency? I'm still having a hard time getting my head wrapped around, you know, some of the things being discussed in terms of, you know, 50% of the cattle need to be sold on a cash basis. Does that really increase prices? I've talked to a number of academics who don't necessarily agree with that and feel that way.
Right.
It feels like it's gaining steam.
You know, and that's one of the things that I continue to hear is if we would go the 50-14 that Grassley Tester pushed or with the Fisher, the question is, would it really change the price structure out there? I don't think that should be the goal. I think the goal should just be to bring some transparency into what is happening out there. I really do. Now, the argument is, if we get that transparency, the prices are going to go up. I don't know if I buy that.
No, I don't know if I buy that. Yeah, not sold yet. Not sold on that one.
Jim's got a chance. Because Grassley Tester's 50-14, it never even got a hearing in the Senate Ag. Is this going to get some attention?
I think it will get a hearing. It's like a tick on a corn chart, Chip, from a market perspective. The more you'll get at it, eventually you'll get through it. But yeah, let the facts just come out. And this is an emotional argument that needs data. And but now you've got pretty good people fighting for this one. And I'm never going to stand in the way of more information.
No, that's right. That's right. Okay. And we will continue to cover that. As a matter of fact, I believe we've got Senator Fisher booked for next week to come on the show and talk about it. Jim, status on the next round of the coronavirus stimulus? Powell wants more, now.
Murky at best. On the one side, you have the Federal Reserve Chairman, Powell, literally begging the lawmakers for more fiscal aid. And on the other hand, you have more than a few Republicans who say, you know, enough already. Let's see how the market's going to work. I don't believe the revised House Democrat plan of $2.4 billion is going to settle it
with a T.
2.4 trillion, because they really just changed the datelines of the program. It's going to have to come down to $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion to have a chance, Chip.
Boy, that's a lot of money. A lot of money.
It's a lot.
What's your thoughts there?
Well, we can't get on a track toward better until we solve the health crisis. And didn't economic numbers go down again this last month? And when we're looking at, I read your Pro Farmer today, and I agree with it, and that we need more stimulus money in there. But we've got to get people back to work, and we've got to keep the jobs that are there without people going back on unemployment. And we got to get people spending money and driving cars and somehow getting back to some kind of normal. And we cannot do that while numbers of COVID keep going up. I think Iowa's a red zone now again.
I saw on Gas Buddy that this Wednesday, it was like the lowest Wednesday for fuel usage since like beginning of March, which I found interesting. You know, and if you look at what's going on in the UK and Spain and France, you know, cases are on the rise again. And so it should be a bit of a warning sign for North America. We got to stay on top of this, or else we're going to be talking a year from now about needing more stimulus.
Yeah. Well, we're getting economic data, the durable goods reports today, the signals more aid is needed. But I'm going to go with Chairman Powell at the Federal Reserve. Hopefully he doesn't have any political bias, and I don't think he does. So I think we need additional aid.
You know, one of the problems with the CARES Act is that some of the programs that were designed to be fiscally stimulus, okay, to stimulate economic activity out there, were redesigned, redirected, redefined as they went forward into supporting businesses rather than supporting spending. if the goal, as Powell wants it, if the goal is to support spending and economic activity, then let it be. Let it be that way. Quit changing the rules on this stuff as we go through. Haney, is the world going to be watching the debate on Tuesday?
Well, I think it's a great moderator. I think Chris Wallace is an excellent choice from Fox to moderate it. He's obviously, I think he's a straight shooter.
He's not afraid to push back.
Yeah. Exactly, on both sides. Yeah. So I think he's going to do a great job. All eyes are on whether Biden keeps it together. I think Democrats are really crossing their fingers on that. Does he have a stumble? And probably some Republicans, too, on Trump. You know, how far off script does he go? And are we going to hear lots about Hunter and that kind of narrative?
Yeah. Jim, I know you're going to be watching. Pam, I assume you're watching.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to say something real quick. More I research Biden, he is a stutterer from a young child.
Oh, yeah.
And I stuttered when I was little and I got out most of it. That explains to me a lot, not all, a lot of his inability sometimes. So I'm going to bow and give him all the leeway, and I hope he's articulate on Tuesday.
Yeah, and he's been very good about reaching out to other young people or young people that stutter and saying, hey, listen, you know, stick with it. You can get over it. You can get over it. But
being a good president is more than giving a speech or doing one debate, right?
That's right.
I mean, I'm a policy wonk.
Guys, we got to go. Pam, thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, thanks. Enjoyed it.
Sean Haney, Real Agriculture. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
All right. Yeah, and Jim, we'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thank you so much. Come back this afternoon. Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing. And Monday morning, we're going to be kicking off Dairy Week.